Hello, and welcome to episode 14 of the Data-Driven Security Podcast. My name is Jay Jacobs. Thank you for joining us for episode 14 of Data-Driven Security Podcast. And joining me is my co-host, Bob Rudess. Bob, what has your panties in a bundle this week?
Well, first of all, Jay, so and to the guests, no one can see our guests, but we have guests. Happy New Year. This is our first podcast of 2015.
Yep, Happy New Year to you, Bob.
And the second thing is I have a wicked statistic to start off the new year with and to start off our podcast with for the new year.
Okay. What is a wicked statistic?
Well, actually, it's not even that. It's also a great plug for the podcast, because folks that actually want to speak at RSA, there's a 100% chance that if you are on our show and you submit to RSA, you get to RSA.
So all of the guests that we've had on,
we have had on this past year, it has a speaking slot at RSA this year.
So is that like one or two or something?
That's like seven.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, that's not too shabby.
It is not too shabby. And we even didn't, you know, like two of our guests weren't even security people, so like they're not even going to be submitting for RSA.
So what proportion of our guests are speaking at RSA?
Well, I think I'm going to direct post people to the blog post that's coming out on Friday about that.
Oh, okay.
So this is a plug for the blog, a plug for the podcast, and for coming on the podcast, and also Happy New Year.
I want to start with Mr. Mustache and bring on Mike Sconzo.
Thanks, Jay and Bob. Yeah. I am, more importantly, my mustache are entirely looking forward to being on the podcast again.
So now we're not doing video for this one, so let's describe the mustache, because it really isn't going to be an important theme, I think, for the podcast. So just describe the mustache for viewers, please.
I don't even know what words I could possibly say that would do it justice in my mind.
Yeah, I agree.
The best way I can describe it is some of the girls in my CrossFit class, they said it looks intimidating, and I said, no. I think what you mean is it looks manly. And one of the girls described it as Hulk Hogan-esque, and I entirely agree with that.
Yes, it is the Hulk Hogan. So let me try and describe it. It starts with like a, boy, what would that be? Like a small brush, right, under your nose, and it's like wrapped around your mouth, dripping off of your chin with your chin shaved, right? I mean, it's like you took a small towel and rolled it up and hung it over your lip.
So Jay, while I do appreciate the fact that you have described it, I normally put images up with each guest as they're on, and I usually use flattering pictures of those folks. I will now use the one that he was just doing as the picture that will pop up when he's there. And every time he speaks, I think I will make sure that that's up as well.
Okay. And you have a new haircut, which does offset the towel on your face.
It's great.
It what?
It migrated, right? It went from anywhere up top to just on the face. Yeah.
So he is just absolutely clean shaven up above, and the thing on his mouth.
Okay. Actually, Jay, as I was saying before, and I hate to say this to Jason, because like, you know, it's gonna happen to him too. This is what happens when you're doing data science long enough. if you do security data science long enough and well, you ain't gonna have head hair. That's all I'm gonna say.
Right, so let's bring on Jason. Jason Trost, another repeat visitor to the podcast. Great to have you on.
Hey, guys. Good to be back.
And just to say, by comparison, you look like a Boy Scout.
So I've heard that before. Thank you.
You look completely normal. So it's great to have you on. One of the things we want to talk about is two recent conferences and how we're seeing the field of security sort of being infected with science and statistics and data science and machine learning and graph theory and all that great stuff. So the two conferences we want to talk about are FlowCon, which were in, where was that, Jason, in Portland?
It was in Portland, Oregon.
Okay. And that was just a week ago.
That's right.
Okay. And then just recently, just a few days after that, was ShmooCon on the East Coast. And Mike, you were at that one.
Yes, that's correct.
Right. So, guys, why don't we start with FlowCon, and we'll talk about just overall, Jason. Now, you're the only one on the call here that was actually able to attend that. How was your overall feeling? Like, how was it different from previous years? Did you see an increase in more discussions about using data science, using statistics, machine learning, stuff like that at the conference?
So I would say, comparing it to past years, and I've only attended one other past year, I think it was 2 years ago, the amount of data science was about the same. 2 years ago, there was a lot of talks on pretty much building classifiers from the flow data, clustering the flow data. This year, I feel like part of the data science moved more towards automated graph analytics. So not necessarily visualizing flow data using graphs, but more like building graphical models of what certain attacks look like, or graphical models of what normal activity looks like, and trying to look for deviations or matches with those models. And there was a few talks, and they kind of all differed on their complexity and their scale. One of the talks I thought was really cool was from PNNL, Pacific Northwest National Lab. I believe their talk was on a system they call StreamWorks, which is a system for real-time graph pattern matching on network data. And they've built, I think this research has been going on for a few years now, and they've continuously been building on it. But what they presented at the conference was a system that they built on top of the Apache Storm project that allows them to analyze mainly network flow data, but I think also other sorts of data, and build these graph models where they can do, they called it subgraph join trees, where they basically in real time as the real time with constraints, like real time with, I think, some sort of sliding window. They're building these graphs of all the flow data flowing through the cluster, the Storm cluster. And I believe they were using some supercomputers for doing this. So it wasn't commodity hardware like most Storm applications, but they were using some really beefy hardware to do this. So they're building these models, pushing the flow data through it and trying to pick out in real time things that matched the graphical models or things that deviated from graphical models. And unfortunately, I didn't take as many notes as I wanted to just because I was trying to look at all the pictures in the presentation. And I was really hoping these slides would come out before I could come on, so I don't have a ton of notes, but it was one of the cooler talks I've seen in a while, just kind of their approach and the scale that they were doing this on. And I wish I had a number, but I don't have the number, the scale number.
Thinking about this, so these subgraph join trees, like, is that when you talk about representing a flows within a graph, for example, you can create like what we were talking about earlier, these spaghetti graphics, right? We set points and lines and just a lot of incredibly busy stuff. And the other side of graphing is the algorithms behind it, talking about distances, nearest neighbor, shortest path, all these great things that you can do with graphs. And you don't need to represent anything visually to run these stuff. Right? So this type of thing, did they include visualizations of the graphs, or was it more the algorithms churning away on it?
It was more the algorithms. So when they had visualizations, it was mainly for how they would build the graphical model. So they took examples of known attack traffic. So they had examples for certain worm outbreaks. They had examples for botnets, for distributed denial of service, for lateral movement, and for a number of different kind of network attack or exploitation events. And they built in most cases, fairly simplistic models. And they were trying to search in real time through the network, the NetFlow data as it flowed through the system for matches against these models. And it's called multiple subgraph join trees. I believe that is an optimization. So they're kind of, it sounded to me a lot like regular expression matching. Like as you start matching a pattern, you can start invalidating pieces of the pattern that you know cannot match based on data that's flowing through the regex. It sounded a lot like that, but for graphs and NetFlow data. And it was NetFlow data enriched with I think IPGeo and some other like attack or enrichment type data, as well as I think DNS, but mainly NetFlow. But so that was probably my favorite talk. I thought that was really cool. There's a few other talks centering around graph analytics, and one talk where they actually presented a new. They're trying to push through a new standard called the Open Cyber Ontology, which they have a website called opencog.net, and their goal is to be able to represent NetFlow data, DNS data, and a bunch of other data sets using RDF, but trying to get the security community to agree on a format and a standard for how you take various types of NetFlow data, so IPFIX, Cisco's format, Silk, and all map them to the exact same RDF structure, with the goal of being able to run, what is it called, Sparkle queries and other graph analytics on top of that data. And the guys who gave that talk were from Cray Supercomputing, the Mayo Clinic, and I think Carnegie Mellon CERT. And I thought their talk was kind of interesting, mainly because at the end, the guy from the Mayo Clinic came on, and he was talking about how they work with Cray, and they have, I think, at least one Cray supercomputer they use for medical analytics on, you know, medical data, protein data, and they have somehow gotten approval to start using one of their supercomputers for doing cybersecurity research at the Mayo Clinic. So this famous medical research institution is going to be using a lot of computing horsepower to push through some what sounds like really interesting cybersecurity analytics using data that's in this OpenCog format. So I thought that was kind of cool, too.
That's really cool.
Wow. There's so many cool things about this. Oh, first off, I wanted to ask, this is a more of an academic type conference, so is there going to be proceedings from this and papers published?
There may be some papers. With this conference, they mainly, from what I remember, they allow you to publish a white paper, I think, if you want, but it's not required. But you do need, they will be publishing the slides after. Okay. But it is more of an academic style conference. Most of the talks, I'd say, are on theoretical type work or like very academic style work. There were a few talks that were kind of interesting as well that were more like practical, hands-on, like real world. You know, we built this thing, we ran it, and here are some results. One of them that I thought was cool was a talk on Elasticsearch, Logstash, and Kibana. And not necessarily just because they use those technologies, but they put basically every single type of meaningful event log data from, I think, one of their like smaller development networks into Kibana and, or sorry, into Elasticsearch. And they were using it for doing really like automated analytics and alerting. So looking for like specific types of patterns where the examples they had were like building profiles per user on when they normally log in, so kind of like a time series type analysis, and then encoding that as Elasticsearch queries, and then building alerts off that. And they had a whole bunch of examples that were very similar. I thought that was kind of cool. The other one that was more practical, and they actually released a tool, is SSH compromise detection using IPFIX data. So they're using only NetFlow data, looking for SSH brute force, successful SSH brute force logins. And the approach was really simple. They broke SSH brute force down into three phases, one scanning, one's the actual brooding of the passwords, and then one is the successful login. And just based on NetFlow data alone, they're able to, with like a 97% accuracy, they're able to detect when this happens successfully. And they released a tool that's pretty cool. It has a UI and has a bunch of other kind of like alerting tools around it that's all centered around this one thing. Open source, it's free. It's called SSH Cure. And I believe it's been around for a couple of years. They just moved it to GitHub, and they just released a new version and pushed a lot of new features.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was actually checking that out, I think over the weekend, or it might have been on Monday, in the GitHub repo, and it's amazing how straightforward. I mean, for folks who are listening, and if they want to go check out something that doesn't require a supercomputer, this is actually pretty straightforward to grok, and it's really readable code, and it works really well. It runs. It's actually pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Agreed.
And just to tack on to that, I mean, you mentioned that it doesn't require a supercomputer. I think that even the work, you know, like you talked about at Mayo on the Cray that they have, like that will help the broader industry, you know, especially if they're out there talking about it and they're talking about what they're doing, you know, because, I mean, the computers are only going to get faster, you know, that we're going to figure out better ways to parse the data. You know, all of that is extremely useful, and I love that there's this conference out there talking about this type of work.
I completely agree.
And so that was a three-day conference?
Yes, it was 3 days.
Okay. Wow.
Plus there's 1 day of training, so I guess it was 4 days.
Okay.
And I actually ended up taking the Brill IDS course by Liam Randall. If you have a chance to take that, I'd highly recommend it. I've been using Brill for a long time, but he presented some stuff I had no knowledge of that's really helpful, mainly about some of the debugging features for when you're writing scripts that were just – I really wish I'd known about them about a year ago. But it was a good class.
Wow, that's great. So was that a full-day class?
It was a half day.
Okay. Wow, the Brill IDS. Who was teaching that?
Liam Randall from Critical Stack.
Okay. Wow. Fantastic. So, I mean, that's for an academic conference, like three and a half days because of the half day training. That seems like a long time. Like, was your brain completely fried at the end?
It was pretty much mush when I left, yeah.
Yeah.
And I actually took the red eye flight home on Thursday night, so Friday was rough.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, speaking of rough, let's talk about mustaches. Bob, do you have anything else to talk about FloCon?
Only that the proceedings aren't up yet, but they do a good job of actually getting the poster sessions up and the whatever else people do want to put up after that. After the fact, just like Jason was saying, so yeah, you'll see tweets from us when they're actually live. I'll probably have a bot check on that every day for a while. And you know, definitely hit it yourself if you want to do that. There's definitely some cool stuff to take a look at from past ones too. So if folks aren't familiar with FloCon, you can kind of get a nice little history of it just by going to the site and looking up their stuff. I'll throw links up on the podcast as usual. Yeah. But there's a lot of good stuff to kind of dive into there even before looking at this year's stuff.
You know, we've had a question in the past about like is most of the security data science focused around NetFlow and packet capture and all that kind of stuff. And I mean, definitely this conference is, you know, and there's a enormous quantity of work going into that type of analysis. And I think it's just so cool to have a conference dedicated to that. And at that level of quality with that type of speakers, very heavily focused on how we're doing this, what we're doing kind of thing. So it just sounds fantastic. And next year it's in Florida, right?
Daytona Beach.
Okay. Daytona Beach in Florida. And it'll be in January again?
Yes, it's always in January.
Okay. Great. So any listeners out there interested in and experiencing the what Jason just went through and having your own brain turn to mush from the amount of knowledge being dumped into it?
And doing a DDSEC field report.
Right. Afterwards. A con report on the podcast. So another recent event that occurred was ShmooCon, and Mike, you were able to make it there this year.
Yeah, it was super excited. This was my second year attending and my second year in a row to go.
Wow, fantastic. You got tickets.
Yeah, last year I cheated and gave a presentation, so that I found, I think, was the second easiest way to get a ticket. This year, one of my friends was presenting, and they have a chance for a guest ticket, so I gave him no choice that I was taking his guest ticket.
that's another easy way to get it.
And yeah. And actually, that's a good thing to hear, because we've had one question for the podcast. I did tweet out that we were doing this, and the question was, you know, how can a poor newbie ever score Shmoo ticks? He suggested algorithmic buying, yeah, might actually do that, or high frequency ticketing or something like that.
So, you know, I've heard that if you submit a talk and it doesn't get accepted, but they liked your submission, that they'll offer you free tickets.
Oh,
I have heard
that.
That
might be another
similar thing to that. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. So, Mike, what was your overall feel on the level of data science within the talks this year?
It was pretty awesome. From what I remember, last year there was like two or three data science related talks, mine and Brian Wiley's being one of them. And this year, I would have bucketed six talks as data science and data analysis related. So, I mean, to me, that's phenomenal. You get six talks out of, you know, basically two full days, so half day Friday, full day Saturday, half day Sunday. So there was definitely something there, and they kind of ran the gamut, right? They had everything from high level, these are the use cases we're looking at and trying to solve, all the way down through people talking about really cool solutions for problems, to people talking about scrubbing data, to people, you know, saying, here's something that I tinkered with, and here are results and data, so you can go reproduce this on your own.
Yeah. Yeah. And so one of the things that I really liked about Shmoo is that they streamed every talk, which was amazing. I mean, just from a logistics perspective, there was a lot of effort put into that, I could tell. You know, just because it was over the weekend, and I got to sit around on the weekend and watch these talks, you know, and it was fantastic. So a huge shout out to the organizers for doing that. Just a fantastic job technically. And any talk I was watching, there were hundreds of people watching the stream, you know, and to put on a conference like that, I mean, they're obviously not, you know, it's not a for-profit thing. So to get more people to experience that and get the information out of it, that's just fantastic. It's just an incredible job by the organizers.
They really do an amazing job logistically as far as getting everything streamed and organized and things being on time and people knowing what's going on. It never ceases to amaze me.
All right, so do you have a few favorite talks that you could call out and talk about specifically?
Yeah, most definitely. I think one of the ones that I took the most away, only because I have super, super limited knowledge of natural language processing and I'm trying to find the exact title so I do them justice. Here it is. Manually searching advisories and blogs for threat data. Who's got time for that?
Yeah, I missed that one.
So it was awesome. You know, they said we focused on a few document types and here we have some NLP models that we'll go through and pull out things like IOCs and contextual information, so things to look for behavior-wise and remediation steps, and they're like, oh yeah, and then we slapped this really awesome GUI on top of it, and they did a little demo, and they said, yeah, we're not releasing the code. So I instantly got so sad at the end.
Oh, that is sad.
But despite that, it was cool to see people talking about using NLP in a security context. I hadn't really seen a whole lot of it, you know, kind of in the public arena. One of the guys I was with who was at Sandia, he was saying, oh, yeah, we're doing some of that. I'm like, well, you're not talking about it, so it's cool if you guys are.
And we've experimented with a little bit, too. You know, we run the VCDB project, the Verisk Community Database, where we try to find publicly announced breaches and then record those in the Verisk format, and that's all out on GitHub. All the data is out there, too. And we've tried to experiment in, you know, like 5 minutes or less experiment, putting in a URL and trying to parse articles for content. You know, there's so many things out there, you know, lost a laptop. I mean, that doesn't take a whole lot of effort to try and figure out what is in there. But just, there's just so many, there's a lot of complexity once you get into NLP, the natural language processing, that it's sometimes an uphill struggle to implement that correctly.
Yeah, I think they said they used OpenNLP as their tech stack.
Okay, I'm not even familiar with that. Bob, do you know that one?
Yeah, actually, that's not a bad one at all. I was actually, like, since I didn't see that talk, I'm just wondering how many shmooballs got thrown at them when they said they weren't going to release the source.
Surprisingly, none, and I had left mine in my hotel room, so I couldn't even throw mine.
I think there was another talk that you should have thrown yours, but that...
I threw a virtual one at that talk. I threw a virtual one, thank you.
Oh, I was going to be nice.
Yeah, we don't have to talk about it.
We are not talking about that one, no.
There's always a range and quality of speakers, and you know, great that everybody gets out there and tries, right?
Totally agree.
So what's another talk that you enjoyed?
So the other one was talking about how to kind of find and more importantly, get a high confidence in white data. So it was white is the new black, why white data really matters. And I thought that was really good. It was a methodology developed at Checkpoint about how they go through and they scrub and they look for really, really white or really, really clean and known good data so that way they can compare it against the malicious for a lot of the models that they're building. And I know myself, and I was actually having this conversation with somebody else today, huge struggle, right?
Huge, yeah.
It was brought up, and I know I've been guilty of this in the past, when you don't, you know, doing executable analysis, you're like, well, I need a really good, you know, known non-malicious corpus, so I'm just going to install Windows and grab everything out of the system32 directory. Well, right, that's great, it's all non-malicious, but what you're really doing is building a classifier that can detect Microsoft binaries.
Right. Yeah. And same thing with it. You know, that was the one thing that I had a question about that talk. First, I caught that talk and I loved it. I mean, it was so, so incredibly pragmatic. I mean, it was, hey, we're trying this and we're having all these struggles. And here's a struggle. Here's what we did to get over it. And I loved it for that because it was so real. You know, it wasn't like, hey, here's something that I thought up and I just, you know, I'm talking about it because I thought about it. It's like, hey, we've been trying this, we've been doing it, and we're struggling. And one, like you said, one of the huge problems is how do we get good, clean, labeled data? But the one challenge that I have is that when she was talking, she was spending a whole lot of time getting really, really pristine, as she called it, white data, right? In other words, sites that are benign, they're good, they're not serving up malware, they're not doing anything bad, and then using that and labeling these really pristine white sites as white. And I don't know if I quite agree with that, because the internet is just absolutely not that way, right? You're going to have machines that are benign that show up in VirusTotal, that show up on places, you know. And if you're doing this, you're generating all these features automatically, you can't sit there and say, you know, this one is good even though it's in VirusTotal. You know, that's what the training data is for. That's why you need to have reality reflected in your training data. And so that was one thing that I kind of took issue with, but it was just absolutely cool to see the steps that they went through. You know, like she talked about the Alexa, the top, you know, 1,000, 100,000, whatever it is, Alexa. One of the things, and I think actually, Mike, you guys did this at Click for the DGA stuff. You took things out of Alexa, right?
Yep.
Which is actually a good first step, right? I mean, they're supposed to be good. They're popular, right? If they're really popular, they're probably not going to be serving maliciousness. But to her point, like, there was something in the top 1,000 or something that was serving malware for like the last 8 years or something. You know, I can't remember exactly what she said.
Yeah.
She had a great example of why you just don't want to accept things like that blindly. And it was really interesting. I hadn't quite thought through Alexa in that level of detail.
It made complete sense, especially given the use case she was looking at, right, where she was looking at detecting malware, whereas, and I think it was even mentioned in the Dan Bala talk from this year, the Practical Network Security, using Alexa for something like DGA detection might be okay. It might be white in that context because you wouldn't expect, you know, DGA domains to pop up in Alexa, right? So they may be serving malware, but for the use case you're examining, right, that being a DGA yes. detection, right, it's probably not. So in that right. context, it's probably okay.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a really good point. Yeah, because she was looking specifically, if I remember right, at full URL strings.
Yes, and right. and more so she, I think if I remember correctly, in the beginning of the talk, she even said, well, there's all that kind of grayware, right, adware and whatnot, so we just kind of ignored that and we looked for, you know, pure malicious and pure clean.
Right. Yeah, so that was a great talk. And I think all these talks are going to be online, right, if they aren't already.
Yeah, I mean, I think people really do need to watch that one. I think the way I would describe it, I think you said it, or like you didn't say it this way, but you've said a similar thing, Jay, which is it shows that this isn't magic that happens with data science, right? It's actually real work. It's actually thinking of things in different ways. It's hitting roadblocks and getting around roadblocks. And just because folks may see very pristine presentations, not at a talk, but like a paper or a blog post or whatever of stuff that works really well and looks really cool, they don't get to see all the blood, sweat, and tears that went behind that and all the errors and all, like, you know, there's a reason why we don't have hair, right? Because that's what happens, you just pull it out. I mean, so people don't get to see that. And that talk, I thought, did a great job underscoring just how much effort and work is involved in doing this. It's not luck. It's not automatic. It actually is doing real work all the time to try to make this stuff go. So I thought that was great.
Yeah.
I totally agree. And then also, yeah, so I think they said they're going to, all the presentations will be on archive.org, but I know they have links through their sites. And then you mentioned about conference proceedings, and last year the presenters, they were asked if they would submit kind of a 1,000-word essay for conference proceedings. So they said that they're going to do last year's and this year's together and kind of a single proceedings that they hope to get released by the end of February, but they were pretty noncommittal about that date.
Yeah. So did you write something up for your talk last year?
I did.
Okay. Good.
And then, so there should be some, hopefully everybody this year contributed so we can get some good proceedings.
So there was something that happened at SHMU that it was very, very subtle, but I took it as a very, very good sign. And someone was talking, I can't remember what talk it was, it might have been one around data science type topic, but they were talking and they mentioned training and test data and they kept talking. They didn't stop and say, here's what's training and test, you know, didn't explain it, just made the assumption that the audience understood what they said. Now, chances are good, probably many people didn't understand that what they were talking about, but it was just so cool that in the security space now, someone started talking about, you know, their training data and just kept going like everybody knew what they were talking about. I mean, that just, it was very subtle, and I picked up on it and just kind of hit me like, wow, we might actually be moving into, you know, doing things with data and doing things well with data.
That's pretty awesome. I totally missed that. It doesn't surprise me. So even given after all the talks, there was quite a bit of audience engagement and question asking, and which was cool, right? Because it showed a lot of the audience members were really, A, digging the subject and the topic, but B, knew enough to ask really, really good questions. You know, everything ranging from, oh, did you try, anything else other than Random Forest, right? Did you look at SVM and that kind of stuff, all the way to super simple but very pointed questions of, yeah, but how is it used operationally, right? So trying to understand what the impact of somebody's research would be.
Yep, that's fantastic. I'm really excited.
That kind of reminds me of a quote that I heard. I Googled the quote and I can't find who said it, so I can't remember if this was in a meeting, but someone said a quote about a year or two ago saying, in 5 years there will be more security data scientists than there are malware analysts, which I thought was kind of an interesting projection. But it does seem to be moving possibly in that direction. The security data science seems a lot more effective than, you know, manually tearing through malware and like spending a ton of time on one like binary. I mean, there are instances where you want to do that, of course, but just kind of what you guys are talking about just reminded me of that quote, and I wish I could find That's who said it to attribute it to them, but I can't find it on Google.
A question, though, like, do you think that you could be this is kind of a tricky question, but do you think that someone is going to be able to be working on malware analysis and not at least understand the language of data science or understand some basic data analytic skills, you know?
In my opinion, I don't think so. I think working with malware and doing reverse engineering, at some point you need to rip out data and use scripts to kind of mine the data, even if that's simplistic searching through it. But in my opinion, no. I feel like the more capable ones are the ones who can apply higher levels of data science if it's more advanced scripting or if it's actually using machine learning. Mm-hmm. So that's just my opinion.
Well, go ahead, Jay. Good.
I was working with a data set today that had like 3.2 million, instances of malware. Like, you can't work at that volume and not at least have some chops with data. I mean, working with, you know, column-based data and, you know, parsing CSVs, I mean, you can't work at that level and not have some chops with data, right? Now, not all malware analysts have to look at the big picture, but I just think it'll be harder and harder as the years go on to be working around that stuff and not have some chops.
Yeah, I mean, what I was going to say, and I can dovetail off of that. So before this security data science thing was the thing, there were a lot of really interesting visualizations coming out of the malware analyst space, more than in the normal security space. Like, well, so while security people were making pie charts and line graphs, you know, the malware people were making really awesome heat maps and finding different ways to visualize the binary space within malware and stuff. They've just been doing very creative things with the data that they have already, and they already are extremely curious people, and they're already really capable people, because they're doing, you know, weird low level binary stuff, and they're working with assembly, and their mind just clicks in a very really cool way, and I think they're going to really like warm up to this a lot faster than any of us are expecting, and will be extreme contributors in this space over the next 3 to 5 years. I think it's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah, and to add on to that, I mean, not just malware analysis, but I think many parts of information security is going to be touched by this. And the really great thing is that there are so many smart people. I mean, most everybody, at least, you know, a few years ago, were completely self-taught, you know, in security. And there's that hacker mentality that, you know, I don't know what this is, I'm going to go out and learn, right? And so I think it might be a little easier for this industry to be moving towards adopting data science than other industries, you know, some of the social sciences, things like that. So anything else, Mike, did you want to talk about anything else with Shmoo?
Yeah, one of the, and Jason brought this up too, and I'll kind of give a little brief shout out to my buddy Dorsey, who did one of kind of, I don't know, maybe one of the more pragmatic talks on, you know, I'm going to create a classifier for looking at Java class and Shockwave Flash. And then not only that, you know, kind of in traditional fashion with him is he released the code and then released all the hashes that he used so people can kind of play with it and use it as a way to, you know, dip their toes in the water of kind of this data analysis and machine learning. So I've got a real soft spot for that kind of stuff when, you know, people are willing to go, here's something cool that I did, and now here's everything that you need to go redo it yourself and make it better, right? And improve on what I did so you don't have to make the same mistakes, or you can make the same mistakes and point them out because I didn't see them, or, right, begin to build on different things.
Yep. I did not catch that talk. And that was one of the early ones during the conference, right? That was like the first one or something
It was the opening slot on Saturday morning.
Yeah.
I felt slightly compelled to be there since he gave me his ticket.
That was good of you. That was very nice.
I'm a true friend.
Right. And that did look super industry. And the fact that, yeah, it's all out on GitHub and stuff, that's just, I mean, that's how we're going to get better, right? Talking and sharing, doing podcasts, right? Stuff like that. Hey, slight change of topics. Hey, Bob, you're completely unprepared for this, but...
Well, wait, before you do that, can you bookmark that one for a second? Because like, I just want to keep the con theme going for one more second.
Sure. Sorry, you go ahead.
So while we didn't go to this con, because I think we all didn't even know what was going on, both David Saversky, well, he's going to kill me, and then Gabe from our team, GD Bassett on Twitter, they both sent me this link posted this link today to the MC2 workshop on data-driven approaches to security and privacy, and I didn't even know it existed before those links came out today, and I'm kind of upset with myself for that. But and there's no proceedings from that conference available, and I don't think they actually put proceedings up from it, so don't go looking for them. If they do that, I'll make sure we have links to it everywhere. But I went to Google Scholar after I saw that and saw the list of people that were actually presenting at it. And I just start exploring each of the different person's researchers' Google Scholar profile, and I got like really excited about security data science. Like, it's not that I was not excited before, or maybe I was losing it a little bit over the past year, but the fact that there is so much interesting research going on in academia, and I know some people like downplay the value of academic research, and I think that's a folly. I think you can find some good nuggets there, and that it actually makes a lot of really good stuff happen in the real world too. But there's a lot of people, like way more people than even the stuff on Jason's art, like great compilation. And we weren't trying to steal your thunder at all with this post, Jason. I got excited and I had to post it. There's so many people doing so much cool stuff with security data and security topics and things that really matter that, I mean, we've never heard of. And it's this whole burgeoning space. There's actually, I was even more impressed because I love the fact that there's like two people that are in bio who are also doing stuff in security. And if for folks that don't study the biospace at all, like, there's a lot of overlap in some of the ways you do analysis with that. And they've got some awesome tools and have built some awesome collaboration. And if they're going to start applying that to security stuff, gosh, this is just going to get super exciting and better over the years. Like, this is just cool. So we have a link up to some of those cool papers just from last year from some of those folks that were at that conference. And I'm going to keep kind of tabs on them in Google Scholar to see what they're I put some alerts up to see, you know, from various ones of them as they put new stuff out. We'll keep doing that. I'll make sure Jason gets them if he wants to put them up in his archive and do that, because it's just neat seeing people doing really cool stuff with it, with everything.
I'm still hung up on the fact that something happened on the internet and you didn't catch it.
I did say I was upset with myself for that.
Yeah, you said a whole bunch of stuff after that. I tuned out because I was just focused on the fact that something happened. You missed it. I'm really shocked. You're letting me down, Bob. So, but I didn't even notice that you did a post on this. I apologize.
Someone's got a blog post this year, Jay. So someone's got to.
Oh boy. I feel bad now.
I'm just saying, someone's, and actually I was actually going to ask, you know these guys to maybe, I know they've got their own blogs, and I know Sushi's double timing us over on Alex's blog, but if they want to actually do guest posts on ours, they're more than welcome to do that, since I can't seem to get my co-logger to maybe do a post.
That's enough motivation. I need in 2015 is just to show Jay up, so I will totally commit to doing something.
Oh, beautiful. And it can. And Mike, I will allow Python code on the site. So you're totally.
You get a little worried there, because I seem amongst you guys, I'm definitely in the minority with Python.
Well, on this podcast, we're about even, because I'm also a Python guy. So.
Yes.
So I challenged both of you to give us two Python posts this year. I won't even make it do one more than one, but each one of you give us a Python post this year.
Perfect.
Is there great. So along the line of blog posts, Bob, where I was going is, I wanted to ask you what you've been doing lately. Because for those who don't know, Bob is, I don't know how to describe it, a workhorse, insomniac maybe. But something like you produce so much stuff. Can you pick, a handful of the things that you've done over the past month since our last podcast, or even before then too? I know the holidays were in there.
Like in security stuff or just in general?
In general, because it's you're so busy, you know.
Yeah.
You did the JavaScript wrapper and.
Yeah, so I guess the one thing that we haven't had a chance to talk about on the podcast yet, and I'm not sure how many people have even seen it. We don't exactly have that many readers, Shane. Is the Hilbert curve stuff? For folks that aren't familiar with Hilbert curve curves. It's a way better way of actually showing IP addresses in a visual way. I think Jay and I are going to talk about it more with some other folks when we talk about mapping IP addresses later on this year. So yeah. I'm not gonna kill it too much by talking about it. But I really wanted to get an R package that I started out making last year, just to give it some sunlight and to maybe cause me to have to work on it a little bit more, because I think it's a really neat way to take a look at stuff and explore the IP space.
So if people remember, there was a few months ago, maybe 6 months ago, where someone, I think they hacked into a ton of routers and they pinged the entire internet. Do you guys remember that?
I think so. Were you talking about the?
It was that internet survey. It was like an internet survey thing that somebody did. Like they
2012, like, right?
Yeah, it wasn't last year. It was a couple years ago. Yeah,
it was a couple. All right, that's my memory for you. Yep. So in there, they had a rather great visualization leveraging the Hilbert curve to show what responded on the internet, what was active on the internet, right? So I don't know if people were familiar with that one. That might ring a bell for what Bob's talking about for the Hilbert curve.
Yeah, and I'm just surprised that it's not used more, honestly, because this whole thing has been around for quite a while, and it's been off and on. It's actually been, it was at FlowCon the 1 year. It's just a great way to do that. There's actually command line tools that let you do stuff with this. And there's, there's Python integrations, Perl integrations, whatever. So like there's, and now there's R. So you can do lots of interesting things with it. I just don't know why more people don't explore it in this particular way, because I think it's a great way to do that. So.
Right. Well, there is a learning curve to look at a Hilbert curve and actually start to understand it. I mean, if you look at a world map, pretty much everybody knows what they're looking at, but a Hilbert curve, it takes a little practice.
So are we going to see you produce a threat map on a Hilbert curve coming soon?
That awesome. That actually might happen, and we may actually have an animated one floating around from last year internally with some indicators of compromise that we did too, that I just that we didn't release because it's internal data. But
right.
So we may actually have that and
with sound effects.
Actually, yeah. Oh, that's right. I forgot about the sound effects. But for this one, the one thing I wanted to do with the art package, and I'm not going to dwell on it much longer, just is it's great having a static thing with ggplot, like way, yeah, raw. But I threw a little JavaScript around this one to make it a little more dynamic, and I kind of wanted to do a lot more with that, so it's way more interactive. Because with this, you know, the reality is you've got like 4096 by 4096 points. You cannot see that unless you've got like one really awesome monitor. Most people don't have that kind of a monitor. And you know, being able to do explorations in other ways with it is kind of neat to be able to do that.
Yeah.
The other one that we had to not take up all the time here, I've been playing a lot with the JavaScript integration with R, just because I think it's hard for people to make JavaScript stuff in general. It takes a lot of time, a lot of effort. A lot of the viz I did for the VCDB, if you go to vcdb.org, there's a whole thing of viz there, and a lot of those are handcrafted. I mean, they're using D3 and some libraries, but it's still handcrafted JavaScript. A lot of people don't have the time for that, don't want to deal with it, but they still want to be able to do interesting things. And a couple really great folks on the internet, and most of the people that listen to this won't know who they are, so I'll just give you the website later. They made this thing called HTML widgets for R, which makes it really super simple to wrap a lot of cool libraries, almost any JavaScript library. Some that are too gnarly can't do it, but almost anyone out there you can wrap with this. And one library that I really took to last year, and I'm not sure if folks are familiar with it either, but it's called Metrics Graphics. It's from the Mozilla folks. And they did it for their dashboards. I mean, it was really something they built for internal stuff that they managed to release open source. And everyone really gravitated, like, not, like, you know, not, it's not, you don't see a lot everywhere, but people really gravitated towards it because it's really straightforward to use, really crisp, clean graphics, very minimalistic. So it's not like it doesn't try to be overbearing like a lot of other libraries are. And yeah, I basically threw together I think within 5 days, I went from 0.1 to 0.5, and you know, have most of the functionality implemented with some new stuff coming too. It's just a lot of fun to do that, to make it easy to type in just like three lines in R and have, you know, 20 graphs show up in an RMD file that you can interactively play with. It's kind of fun.
Yeah, that is fun stuff. So that's like a tenth of the stuff you've done in like the last 30 days. So I don't know if we want to cover anything more, but did you want to talk about anything else? Or?
I'm kind of good. Yeah.
Okay. Great. Well, I think we could probably wrap up here. The only other thing that I want to mention, Bob, is that you and I are speaking at RSA twice, right? On Tuesday and Thursday.
That's correct. We actually doing, so for folks that want to have to suffer through the same thing twice, you can come twice. Or you can have your friends come to the next one and throw stuff at us, that if you couldn't throw stuff at us for the first one, yeah.
All right. So just to let people know, if you're listening to the podcast and want to see us live and in person, Bob looks just the same in person as he does on the podcast. So
I don't know. I'm thinking of doing that whole sushi look going on now. I might actually shave off the goatee and let the
mustache. You know, I've been thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
I like where this is going.
Bob, should we have just a throwdown match on who can get the biggest rug dripping off our chin?
I've got a head start on you though, Jay. So I don't know.
Yeah, you do.
I don't know.
All right. Well, we'll see how that turns out.
And actually, I'm speaking separately with another DDSec participant, Stephen Boyer from BitSight. We're talking data science as well there too. And I believe, as we mentioned earlier, there's a whole bunch of people speaking there. But like, I think David Seversky, Michael Reutman, and Kimberly Price are doing a joint talk from some of the research work that they've actually, very practical research work they've been doing in the vulnerability space. And that's kind of cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And Andrew Hay and Tebow.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they are too. Yeah. So we're going to have an entire post up. This is just a self-aggrandizing post about all the stuff that's going on with DDSec participants at RSA, probably a little custom schedule thing that we'll have up there. Just so folks can make sure that we are literally data-driven security is taking over RSA.
That's awesome.
All right. And it'll only get better, right?
I make no guarantees.
Yeah, okay. We could do far worse next year, I guess. That's a good point. All right. Well, Jason, Mike, guys, thank you so much for joining us on this podcast. It's been a fantastic discussion.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All
right. It's awesome. Thanks again, guys.
Yeah. All right, Bob, I will talk to you later.
Later, guys.
See you guys.